A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hannah sent us this one, and it's the kind of question that hits close to home, literally. She's been seeing pigeon problems across a bunch of different buildings, mostly ground floor apartments. Balconies, window ledges, those recessed laundry alcoves they call mystique fissure here, even plain ledges above windows, just caked in droppings. The question is, what's actually going on here? Why do these specific architectural features become pigeon magnets? And what can anyone realistically do about it?
That balcony scene is playing out in thousands of apartments right now. But to understand why, we need to look at the building itself. This isn't about pigeons in parks or plazas. It's about the intimate, persistent infestation on residential buildings, and especially ground floor units where every ledge, alcove, and overhang becomes a potential nesting site.
The mystique fissure, which is just a recessed box built into the exterior wall above a window, meant to hide laundry lines and those rolling shutter mechanisms, is basically a pigeon penthouse. Three walls, a roof, a flat floor, and nobody ever goes in there.
And here's what makes this worth a full episode. We're not just talking about an aesthetic nuisance. Pigeon droppings are acidic, with a pH around 4 to 5, similar to lemon juice. Over time, that etches glass, corrodes metal railings, and degrades concrete. And that's before we even get to the health risks.
Which are real and weirdly specific, and almost nobody knows about them. So let's dig in. Why do pigeons treat our buildings like luxury real estate?
The answer starts with a cliff, literally. Feral pigeons, Columba livia domestica, are descended from rock doves that nested on sea cliffs. Their ancestral nesting sites were flat, narrow, sheltered ledges, exactly the kind of geometry you find on a building. A horizontal surface at least 4 inches deep with overhead cover and a clear escape route with a good view of approaching predators. That's the exact spec sheet for a window ledge, an AC unit sill, or a mystique fissa.
A pigeon looks at a concrete balcony ledge and sees the cliffs of Dover.
And the mystique fissa is even better because it provides three-sided shelter. It's a cave with a view. Once you understand that, the whole pigeon in the city thing stops being mysterious. We built thousands of artificial cliff faces and then got surprised when cliff-dwelling birds moved in.
Which makes the mystique fissa the architectural equivalent of leaving out a welcome mat that says, "Rock doves, please colonize."
Here's where it gets worse. Once a pair successfully nests in one of these spots, they release what's called a home scent, secretions from the uropygial gland, the same gland birds use to preen their feathers. Their chicks imprint on that exact location. Pigeons have a phenomenon called natal philopatry, the tendency to return to the place they were born to breed, so you get a generational cycle. The pigeons on your balcony this year are probably the great-grandchildren of the pigeons that nested there 5 years ago.
Wait, so it's not just that pigeons like the spot. They're literally scent-marking it and passing down the address.
That's exactly what's happening. This is why a single untreated balcony becomes a chronic, multi-year problem. You're not dealing with random pigeons discovering a nice ledge. You're dealing with a family lineage that considers your mystique fissa their ancestral homeland.
The pigeon version of my grandfather built this nest.
They have excellent spatial memory. They can navigate back to a specific ledge from miles away. Studies have shown pigeons can remember individual human faces and associate them with either food or threat. So if someone on the ground floor has been feeding them, or if there's a poorly sealed trash bin nearby, the pigeons map that whole territory. Ground floor apartments are especially vulnerable because they're closer to food sources. Street level crumbs, restaurant dumpsters, residential kitchens.
You've got the cliff illusion pulling them in, the scent imprint locking them in, and the food proximity keeping them around. That's a three-part trap.
It explains why the problem concentrates on lower floors. Upper floor balconies get pigeons too, but ground floor units are at the intersection of all three mechanisms. They're closer to food, they have ledges at the right height, and once colonized, the scent trail is right at pigeon level.
Let's talk about what people actually try to do about this. Because the market for pigeon deterrence is basically a museum of failed ideas.
The classic starting point is the fake owl. The theory is that pigeons see an owl and flee. The reality is that pigeons figure out within about 48 hours that the owl never moves, never blinks, and never attacks. At that point, they ignore it completely. I've seen photos of pigeons nesting on top of plastic owls.
The owl becomes just another piece of furniture. Oh, that's Steve. Steve doesn't do much.
Then there are ultrasonic repellents, devices that emit high-frequency sounds supposedly irritating to birds. Multiple studies have shown these are largely ineffective. Pigeons habituate to the sound within days, they just tune it out. And the frequencies that might actually bother them are often inaudible to humans, which makes it hard to even know if the device is working.
Half the time, the device itself becomes a nesting surface.
Chemical repellents like methyl anthonylate, which is basically grape flavoring, the same compound used in grape soda, can work as a temporary irritant. It stimulates the trigeminal nerve in birds, which is like a mild chemical burn sensation. But it washes off in rain, degrades in sunlight, and needs constant reapplication. It's a maintenance nightmare, not a solution.
What about spikes? Those needle strips you see on ledges.
Spikes work, when they're installed correctly and maintained. The problem is they're ugly, they collect debris, and pigeons sometimes just build nests on top of them, using the spikes as structural support for twigs and garbage. There are documented cases of pigeons weaving nests directly into spike strips. The spikes become rebar for pigeon construction.
That's almost admirable! The sheer refusal to be deterred.
It's evolution in action. These birds have been living alongside humans for 5,000 years. They were domesticated by the Sumerians, used for meat and message carrying, and then they went feral again. They're not easily discouraged.
We've got fake owls that become roommates, sounds they ignore, chemicals that wash off, and spikes they build condos on top of. What actually works?
There's a case study from New York City in the 1990s. People called it the Pigeon Wars. Building owners tried everything. Electric tracks that gave a mild shock, sticky gels that made surfaces uncomfortable, even hiring falconers to patrol with hawks. The falcons worked temporarily, but it was expensive and the pigeons just came back when the hawk left. What finally worked across multiple buildings was simple, netting and ledge sloping. Retrofitting ledges to a 45-degree angle reduced nesting by 90%.
45 degrees! That's the magic number?
Pigeons need a flat or nearly flat surface to land and perch. Anything steeper than about 45 degrees and they can't get a grip. Their feet are adapted for perching on branches and walking on flat ground. They're not cliff clingers in the way a swift or a swallow is. A 45-degree slope makes the surface functionally invisible to them as a nesting site.
The solution isn't to make the ledge painful or scary. It's to make it not a ledge anymore.
And that's the principle behind every effective pigeon deterrent. You're not fighting the pigeon. You're changing the geometry so the pigeon's own instincts tell it this is not a nesting site. Netting works the same way. It creates a physical barrier that makes the alcove or ledge inaccessible. A half-inch galvanized steel mesh over a mystique fissa opening, properly secured, solves the problem permanently.
Okay, so we know why they're there and what doesn't work. But what happens when they stay? The damage goes way beyond aesthetics.
Let's talk about the droppings. I mentioned the pH of 4 to 5. That's acidic enough to etch glass over time. If you've ever seen a window with a kind of cloudy, permanent haze that won't clean off, and there's a pigeon roost above it, that's acid etching. The uric acid in the droppings reacts with the silica in glass.
The pigeons are literally sandblasting the windows with their digestive byproducts.
It's worse for metal. The combination of uric acid and moisture creates a mild corrosive solution that accelerates rust on iron railings and pitting on aluminum frames. For concrete, the mechanism is more complex. The droppings contribute to carbonation, where carbon dioxide dissolves in the acidic solution and reacts with calcium hydroxide in the concrete, breaking down the cement paste. Over years, this can cause spalling, chunks of concrete flaking off.
Which, for a ground floor balcony that's already exposed to rain and humidity, is just accelerating the decay.
The structural damage is arguably not even the biggest concern. The health risk is what most people don't know about. The primary pathogen associated with pigeon droppings is a fungus called Histoplasma capsulatum. It causes histoplasmosis, a lung infection.
This isn't from touching the droppings, or being near live pigeons.
No, that's the key misconception. People think pigeons carry disease directly, through bites or contact. The real risk is from inhaling aerosolized fungal spores. Here's how it works. Histoplasma grows in soil that's been enriched with nitrogen from bird droppings. When the droppings dry out and get disturbed, say, someone sweeps a balcony or a pressure washer hits a ledge, the spores become airborne. You breathe them in, they reach the alveoli in your lungs, and in most people the immune system handles it without symptoms. But for immunocompromised individuals, it can cause a serious respiratory infection that mimics pneumonia.
The danger isn't the pile of droppings. It's the act of cleaning it the wrong way.
Dry sweeping a pigeon-covered balcony is one of the worst things you can do. You're creating a cloud of microscopic fungal spores and inhaling them directly. The same goes for using a leaf blower or a dry brush.
Which is exactly what most people would do. Grab a broom, sweep it off the ledge, done.
That's how you get a lungful of histoplasma. The safe method is to wet everything down first. A disinfectant solution, one part bleach to nine parts water, or a commercial enzyme cleaner. Let it soak for 10 to 15 minutes, then remove the material while it's still wet. Wear an N95 mask and gloves. Bag the waste and seal it. The goal is to never let the droppings become dust.
There's also Chlamydia sitaki, right? The one that causes psittacosis?
Yes, though it's less common. Psittacosis is a bacterial infection, sometimes called parrot fever, and it can be transmitted by pigeons. But again, the transmission route is primarily through inhaling dried droppings or respiratory secretions, not from the birds themselves. The pattern is consistent. The danger is aerosolized waste, not the animal.
Let's talk about the mystique fissa specifically, because that's the detail in Hannah's question that I think a lot of listeners will recognize. These recessed alcoves above windows, they're basically sealed boxes with a small opening designed to hide laundry lines and rolling shutter mechanisms. They're dark, sheltered, and almost never accessed by residents.
They're perfect pigeon condos. Three-sided shelter, a flat floor, out of direct sunlight, and often with gaps around the edges where the shutter mechanism enters the wall. Once pigeons colonize a mystique fissa, it becomes a biohazard zone. The droppings accumulate in the crevices, and because the space is enclosed, the ammonia smell concentrates. That ammonia can actually off-gas into the apartment through gaps around the window frame.
The droppings attract insects, pigeon mites. Demonisus gallinae are tiny blood-feeding parasites that live in bird nests. When the pigeons leave or the nest gets overcrowded, the mites migrate looking for new hosts. They'll come through window gaps, electrical outlets, any crack in the wall. They bite humans, causing itchy welts, and they're extremely difficult to eradicate once they're inside.
This is the cascade effect nobody thinks about. One pair of pigeons in a mystique fissa leads to droppings, which leads to fungus, which leads to mites, which leads to an infestation inside the apartment. And because the mystique fissa is part of the building structure, not the apartment's interior, the tenant often can't access it to clean it.
Which brings us to the legal question. If you're a renter and there's a pigeon infestation in a structural alcove you can't even reach, whose problem is it?
This is where it gets complicated. In many cities, landlords are responsible for pest exclusion, keeping the unit free of rodents, insects, and other pests. But pigeons are often classified as wildlife, not pests, which creates a loophole. A landlord might argue that pigeons on an exterior ledge are no different from birds in a tree. It's nature, not a maintenance issue.
Which is absurd, because a mystique fissa is not a tree. It's a built structure that the landlord owns.
The better argument is through the warranty of habitability, the legal principle that a rental unit must be safe and livable. If pigeon droppings are creating a health hazard, if the ammonia smell is entering the apartment, if mites are biting residents, that's a habitability issue. Take photos of the droppings, the nesting material, any insects. Request a professional pest assessment in writing. Send a certified letter to the landlord citing the specific health risks: histoplasmosis, psittacosis, mite infestation. In many jurisdictions, if the landlord doesn't respond within a reasonable time, you may have grounds for rent withholding or lease termination.
The certified letter is important. It creates a paper trail. If this ever goes to housing court, you need to show you notified them properly.
Some cities have gotten more proactive about this. There was a study in Barcelona in 2023 that looked at building-wide pigeon management. Buildings that retrofitted ledges with 45-degree slopes saw a 78% reduction in pigeon roosting within 6 months. That's a massive effect from a simple geometric change. And Barcelona has been dealing with this problem for decades. Their Gothic quarter has ledges that are centuries old, perfect pigeon habitat.
78% in 6 months. That's the kind of number that should make building owners pay attention, because it's not just about tenant complaints, it's about long-term maintenance costs. Every year you don't slope the ledges is another year of acid etching on the windows and corrosion on the railings.
Here's a comparison that helps frame the issue. Coastal buildings have a similar problem with seagulls. Both pigeons and seagulls are protected under wildlife laws in many regions. You can't just poison them or shoot them. The only effective long-term solution for both is habitat modification, sloping ledges, installing netting, sealing entry points. The birds aren't the enemy. The architecture is.
Which is a humbling thought. We design the problem into our buildings, and the only real fix is to design it back out.
That's the thread I want to pull through this whole episode. The pigeon problem isn't really about pigeons. It's about building design that ignores biology. We created thousands of artificial cliff ledges and then acted surprised when cliff-dwelling birds moved in. The solution isn't waging war on birds, it's smarter architecture.
Given all that, what can you actually do? Let's get practical.
First, the single most effective DIY fix for a balcony ledge, create a sloped surface. You can buy commercial pigeon slope products. They're basically angled plastic or metal panels that attach to the ledge. Or you can make your own with a simple wooden wedge cut to a 45-degree angle, painted and sealed for weather resistance, and screwed or adhered to the ledge. It's cheap, it's humane, and it's permanent. The pigeon lands, can't get a grip, and moves on.
If you're a renter, you'd want to get landlord approval before drilling into the ledge. But a lot of these products use adhesive or clamp mounts that don't require permanent modification.
Second, and I cannot stress this enough, never dry sweep pigeon droppings. Always wet them down first. One part bleach to nine parts water, or a commercial enzyme cleaner designed for bird waste. Let it soak for 10 to 15 minutes. Wear an N95 mask, wear gloves, keep the material wet while you're removing it, and bag it in sealed plastic. If it's a large accumulation, hire a professional remediation service. This is not a job to cut corners on.
The bleach solution also helps with the ammonia smell, which is a bonus.
Third, for mystique, fissa, or recessed alcoves, the solution is exclusion. Install galvanized steel mesh with half-inch openings or smaller over the entire opening. Leave a small gap for airflow if the shutter mechanism needs ventilation, but make sure the mesh is secured on all sides with screws and washers, not staples. Pigeons can pry staples out. This is a one-time fix that requires some DIY skill or professional installer, but it solves the problem permanently. The pigeons can't get in, end of story.
If you're worried about the look, you can paint the mesh to match the wall color. It practically disappears.
Fourth, if you're a renter, know your rights. Document the problem with dated photos. Send a certified letter to your landlord detailing the infestation, the health risks, and your request for professional mitigation. Cite the warranty of habitability. In many jurisdictions, this triggers a legal obligation for the landlord to act within a reasonable time frame. If they don't, you may have grounds for rent withholding, repair and deduct, or lease termination without penalty. But check your local laws. The specifics vary.
One thing people don't think about, when you're touring an apartment, look up. Check the ledges above the windows. Look for droppings, feathers, nesting material. Check the mystique fissa if the apartment has one. If you see signs of an active pigeon colony, that's a red flag. It tells you the building management either doesn't know about the problem or doesn't care. And neither option is great.
A single viewing might not catch it, but if you see white streaks down the wall below a ledge, that's dried droppings. If you smell ammonia near the window, that's an active roost. These are things you can check in 30 seconds that could save you years of headaches.
Those fixes will solve your balcony problem, but they raise a bigger question about how we build our cities.
As cities get denser and we build more ledges, balconies, and green roofs, are we inadvertently creating a perfect pigeon habitat? Green roofs in particular. They're great for stormwater management and urban cooling, but they're also basically ground-level feeding stations for pigeons. We're putting grass and seeds on top of buildings and then wondering why birds show up.
It's the architectural equivalent of putting out a bird feeder and then complaining about the birds.
The future of urban wildlife management has to involve architects and urban planners thinking about these interactions at the design stage. You can slope ledges from the start. You can design alcoves with integrated mesh. You can choose materials that don't provide perches for perching birds. These aren't expensive changes. They're just not part of the standard design vocabulary yet.
The pigeon problem isn't really about pigeons. It's about building design that ignores biology. The solution isn't war on birds. It's smarter architecture.
That's the thought I want to leave listeners with. If you're dealing with this problem, you're not crazy, you're not dirty, and you're not losing a battle with nature. You're living in a building that accidentally recreated a cliff ecosystem, and the fix is to change the geometry.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The name São Tomé derives from St. Thomas, but the island's Portuguese name was influenced by tonal patterns in the local Foro Creole language, which, unlike Cantonese's 6 to 9 tones, has only 2 phonemic tones, making it one of the few African Portuguese creoles with a fully contrastive tonal system.
Right. If you have a weird prompt you want us to tackle, maybe Hannah's question sparks something you've been dealing with in your own apartment, send it to prompts@myweirdprompts.com. We read everyone.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Corn. Build smarter ledges.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.